Hi, this is Janie Reisner, and welcome once again to Women's Voices. If you happened to tune in last month to my show with Karen Tate, you may recall we listened to the voice of Matthew Fox and she discussing the new Pope's position on the Catholic nuns who have been in the limelight for daring to chart their own course and wondering what the Pope would do. The Vatican announced this week that bus riding, foot washing Pope Francis supports his predecessor's crackdown on the leadership conference of Women's Religious, an umbrella organization that represents 80% of nuns in the United States. Like Pope Emeritus Benedict, Francis believes that the nuns focus too much on serving their communities around issues of health care and economic justice and too little on gay people and abortion. In a report issued by the Vatican under Benedict's leadership, the Holy See accused the group of undermining issues of crucial importance to the life of the church and society, such as the church's biblical view of family life and human sexuality, and promoting radical feminist themes incompatible with the Catholic faith. With Francis's blessing, the Vatican will continue its program of reform, which includes the appointment of 3 male bishops to manage the rewriting of the nuns' conference statutes, review its community-based programs, and otherwise ensure the group properly follows Catholic teaching. The announcement, coming from a new pope commonly hailed as a gentler, kinder pontiff, was received with great disappointment by many American nuns. We expected Pope Francis to dismiss the mandate against the nuns, but instead he broke the hearts of Catholics everywhere, said Erin Hanna, executive director of the Women's Ordination Conference. If you listened to last month's show, you also heard the voice of Father Roy Bourgeois, founder of the School of the Americas Watch, say what he hoped the nuns would say to the Great Father. You are not our boss. We serve God. We are not here to serve you. We are your equal under God. So it will be interesting to see how all this plays out.
Thank you.
Well, my first guests this evening are Karen Uphoff and Elena Guest, who have come to tell us all about the upcoming Mendocino Coast's 5th Annual Women's Retreat. My guest in the following half hour will be Leslene Della Madre, sharing her experiences in Australia, leading workshops on women's blood mysteries, and restoring Medusa's head. That is, restoring women's wisdom. We are going to be hearing a lot about women's circles this evening. These interviews have been previously recorded, as no one was free for tonight. First, Elena Guest and Karen Uphoff. My guests this evening are Elena Guest and Karen Uphoff, who have both been involved with the Mendocino Women's Retreat since it began 5 years ago. Welcome to Women's Voices. You've both been in this community for a number of years. Would you like to briefly introduce yourselves and the work that you do in the community?
Oh, my name is Karen. As you know, I'm a herbalist and natural healer and nutritional consultant at Corners and my own business, and I have the Holistic Health Perspectives radio show with Mary Pat. And I have been involved in women's groups and putting on actually kind of goddess workshops, they were called, in Santa Barbara and in Germany. And so I've always had an interest in women's gatherings, the Women's Herbal Symposium, involved in helping out with those things.
Thank you.
And this is Elena, and I am also a healing artist. And my particular field is clinical hypnotherapy. I have a practice in Mendocino, and I'm also privileged to be on staff at the Mendocino Coast District Hospital. With respect to women's retreats and groups, here I have been involved with not only this women's retreat, but one that preceded that for a good 6 years prior to being involved with this one. So for close to a dozen years, I've been very dedicated to, spearheaded a number of women's retreats, and I've been involved in women's groups myself.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. So you're here to talk about the 5th Annual Mendocino Women's Retreat. We'll cover this at the end also, but could you give the dates of the retreat and where it's being held?
Sure. The dates this year, 2013, are September 13th through the 15th, and it's being held at Rivers Bend in Philo, which is, for anyone who doesn't know it, a glorious spot, complete with the Navarro River and oak trees and many, many acres.
A beautiful place, indeed. And we'll talk more about that at the end and how people can find out about registering. There was a group, core group of women that came together to plan that first retreat, as I recall, and it grew out of that, yes?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that was 5 years ago. Were you both involved at that time?
Elena was involved in the core group. I was there for one meeting and volunteered myself as a yoga instructor, but that was it. Elena, yeah. You were...
Well, what I'd like to say about that is that there, a number of us felt that there was a real need for actually community-wide retreat that annually that would be open to women of all ages, all interests, all types, and that previously anything that I'd been involved in was a little more specific than that. We really wanted to open it up. And so with that idea in mind, a number of us got together many, many times in order to plan and organize a retreat. And I can tell you that grace really intervened so that the retreat itself, that first one, was astonishing. It just was so beautiful, and it had... And we knew that we had something that then was going to, as I said, have legs. and absolutely then we were even more inspired to continue it. And you can see that we're now doing our 5th year.
Mm-hmm. It was a success.
Oh, it was.
Yeah. So each year you have a theme. How are the themes chosen, and what is this year's theme?
Well, the themes have been chosen by whoever is putting the retreat together. And in the past, we've had, well, I know the second year theme is connecting deeply with each other and ourselves. And in the third year, I helped organize that one. It was exploring friendship through the cultivation of presence, empathy, and connection. Last year was focusing on empowerment and sovereignty, and Lena was very involved in that. And this year, it is circles and cycles, women in sacred relation with all of creation.
Sounds lovely.
And the themes have grown out of each other, especially out of the last 3 years. Our process by the end of the retreat has been so that people sort of felt like we needed to continue with this next level of something. Mm-hmm. And so there's an organic process to the selection.
Sure. Well, how do you do that? I mean, do you have workshops that are geared toward those particular themes you're speaking of?
Yeah, let me jump in and talk about that a little bit, because particularly for the one that I helped plan and manifest on the fourth year, it was as Karen said, about empowerment and sovereignty. In order to lead up to that, all of the planners attended workshops where we really explored archetypes, we really explored the deep meaning of personal empowerment, sovereignty within, so that we did a lot of work even prior to arriving at the retreat. And so, and then I told the story of the Handless Maiden, which was a very relevant story to this theme. And then as it happened, I mean, this is just one of those lovely synchronicities, a musical version of the story that I told ended up being offered at Berkeley Rep. And so a number of us, not just planners, but people from the retreat, women from the retreat, accompanied me to go to see that play. And it was in that way that we even deepened and continued the work of the retreat. And I can tell you that I believe that then that informed us and inspired us to move into the next level, which this year has to do with deepening that sense of sovereignty in our own stewardship of the world and the land and the nature around us.
Mm-hmm.
And I will add that the theme of the retreat for many of us continues throughout the entire year until the next retreat. So we're given, we ask ourselves deeply what the meaning of these things are, and our workshops include sharing and dialogue with each other, movement, toning, different ways of exploring the theme. And everybody experiences insights into themselves and their lives, and that is what you actually take with you when you leave the retreat. And I know for myself, it continues throughout the year, and that theme will keep showing itself, and it's unraveling or unfolding in my life, and it's a very powerful transformation process that goes on.
Mm-hmm. You have a poem, Elena. Would you like to share it right now? Does that seem like it would fit?
Although, because of what Karen was just saying, I wanted to share a personal transformation that happened for me in the retreat, because I have an idea that that will, you know, have more meaning possibly than even the poem.
Okay.
The river is so glorious, as I already mentioned, that what ends up happening is inevitably, and lovely, it's lovely that there's time to allow for this, and if the weather is really beautiful and sunny, as it has been many times, a lot of us file down to the river. And of course, many people skinny dip. And I had this experience 3 years ago where everyone else was sitting around naked, gabbing or swimming, you know, or both, of course. And I was the only person who wasn't. I was sitting on the side by myself, and part of it had to do with my own history, my own feeling of alienation and not being sure about being in a group of women. And it's possible some people can relate to what I'm talking about. And the next morning, when we sat in a circle to talk about the retreat, our own reflections about the retreat, I broke down. I started crying, and I said, I have been hurt by women. And when I went down to the river yesterday and watched all of you having so much fun, I couldn't take my clothes off because I was afraid. And by some miracle, my heart was still open, but I told everybody that I had spent most of my life alone without a close girlfriend, and I longed for deep connection with another woman. And this is all in tears. The whole circle changed, I can tell you. And one by one, many women walked up to me and said, when you stepped forward and spoke, my heart leapt. You aren't alone. You're courageous. I understand you. I have some of those same feelings and fears. I know many of us share these. And a number of women even held me and said, I love you. And I can tell you, this changed me so much that obviously the next year I even spearheaded the retreat. It has changed my sense of connection with women so much. The next day, I went down to the river and I took my clothes off and I crossed the bridge to the shallow side of the river and waded in. And then I sat there naked except for a Spanish gambler's hat and just baked and joined in the conversation with everybody else.
Life-altering.
Yeah, life-altering.
Yes,
exactly.
It can be. It really can be.
Is now a good time for your poem?
Oh, if you like. So remember, our theme is circles and cycles. Women in sacred relation with all of creation. So one of my favorite poems happens to be called I Live My Life in Widening Circles. I live my life in widening circles that reach out across the world. I may not complete this last one, but I give myself to it. I circle around God, around the primordial tower. I've been circling for thousands of years, and I still don't know. Am I a falcon, a storm, or a great song? That's by Rilke.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a lovely poem. Lovely. What are some of the workshops that you will be offering? And are you referring to workshops as circles?
In some ways, this year, the organization is around the life circles, like the circle of birth and the circle of growing up, and the circle of maturation, motherhood, and finally the circle of death or transformation. So those are parts of what we will be exploring each day in that kind of sequence as they come together more and more towards the end. But the actual, one of the things that will be different this year is everyone will be going out on a sacred quest where they will spend time, a certain amount of time, silently in nature, communing with nature and getting messages and sharing with the environment, and in that process choosing objects in nature that may call to them and making a talisman. And we'll be sharing that process together, because part of the big circle that we're connecting up with is the fact that we are part of the earth and she is part of us, and that we are all one. And so the widening circle is the universe itself and our place in it and our part in it and feeling that connection with all of life.
How does it begin, generally?
Well, I'm so glad you asked that, because we always take special care to create a very safe environment so that there is a container that we work to make sure that everyone will feel and trust that they are safe. And every year we have new women, which is wonderful. And we've always had women volunteer the fact that they are so relieved and surprised that even coming into a circle where there were people, of course, who already knew each other, that they never felt like they weren't a part of that, or that they were that there were any cliques, or that they were alienated from it. In fact, they just felt included, they felt welcomed, and especially really comment on the safety of place. And we take special care about that. And also, there are always people there to call upon, and so the sense of really being taken good care of is also there. I think it should be mentioned also that the space is very conducive to these retreats. It almost couldn't be better, both the interior spaces and exterior spaces. And this River's Bend provides the most glorious meals. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. The breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And the food even caters to your specific needs or preferences. And so everyone has really been thrilled about that.
Yeah, and so one of the main things we start with really on late Friday afternoon is greeting. There's a greeting committee, and you're welcomed in the most glorious way, really, kind of rambunctious way. It's very sweet. And everybody has some kind of name tag. Each year it's done a little differently so that we do learn each other's names. And there are, as Elena said, always new people who we're welcoming. That's what we'd like. And then Friday night we have dinner together, and the retreat is kind of gone over then a little bit, the schedule. And then we have a kind of opening ritual or circle on that Friday night, which sets the tone for the weekend, really.
My memory of, I've attended two of the workshops, is that such a special time of being greeted, and it's that first evening. Of course, the second evening was very fun, too.
Oh, yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about that, at least in the retreats I've been in? It's been very... people sharing poems or songs or drumming or doing amazing, wonderful things.
Yeah, after a full day of all kinds of interesting things and sometimes art projects and all sorts of things, we come together in the evening after dinner for a, well, in the past it's been for what we call a What I Love show. This year I think it will be a little different, have a different name too. But essentially, it is a time of sharing ourselves, our own creative expression in poems, in dancing, in theater even, in storytelling, in all kinds of song, you know, own written songs or comedy sketches.
One of the things I want to jump in and say about that, though, in case people are saying, oh, gee, I don't really sing, or I don't dance, or I'm not an actor, what I want to say is that it turns out this is such a safe place and so warm and appreciative that women have in almost every case, every woman has been able to step forward and do something that she's always wanted to do, say, since she was 5 years old. When that sing that torch song or get out and read a poem or tell a joke. And it has been so freeing and so delightful. And we've surprised ourselves and surprised one another. And it has been just fabulous every single time.
Yeah, and I will say that this year I know it will be different, so I don't want people also to expect that. I think they'll be sharing around our sacred quest and things like that. But there is often drumming at the end and even stargazing. So that Saturday night is really fun, yeah.
And then Sunday, what happens on Sunday?
Yeah. We come to breakfast with our eyes, you know, open a little, not as far as the night, the morning before, from a fun night. Well, Sunday is a time when we do usually have a morning kind of workshop, but the emphasis, especially on Sunday, is sharing our experience of the workshop, of the retreat, and also kind of bringing the theme into a kind of closure.
And there's almost always an intent to speak to how are we going to take what has occurred, what has stirred in us, and take it into our lives, incorporate it into our lives, so it doesn't live at River's Bend or as an experience that is distinct from our lives, but we really not only speak to that, but in many instances we've made a promise, a vow, about how we are going to take the work that we've done and the realizations we've had and incorporate it into our lives. And it's just been profound, mm-hmm. I can tell you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that adds power to mm-hmm. the experience because we're all saying this to each other. So there's, I don't know if the word accountable or accountability is right, but you are making a commitment to yourself in front of people who are supporting you in doing that.
We're witnessing.
Witnessing.
There's power in having yeah. people witness when you're making a promise yeah. to yourself. Yeah.
Yeah.
How do people sign up for this?
Well, we do have information on a website just for information-wise and a registration form you can print out. And that's at www.mendocinowomensretreat.com. All one word, of course. And otherwise, you can call for more information, 937-1222, or you can call 964-8333.
And if you're out of the area, those numbers are preceded with 707.
Thank you, Janie.
Yeah.
Yes. And there are, today, I'm putting up at Corners of the Mouth, there will be registration forms available already printed out there for people who, you know, aren't able to print out a form themselves.
Uh-huh. And this is held right outside Philo. Is that correct?
Yes, it's right outside the town. It's on the same road as Highland Ranch. You do have to register beforehand, you know, fill out a registration form, and there you choose your level of accommodation you'd like, because River's Bend has everything from camping to rustic kind of cabins to less rustic cabins, and you know,
and lodges.
And lodges, right.
With both private and shared suites.
Yes, and that difference is reflected in the cost of the retreat. And then all meals are included. So it's kept quite affordable. And if somebody really has a problem feeling like they can afford the retreat and they really want to go, then they talk to somebody at the numbers I just gave out, and I can give them out again. Because we have a certain amount of
scholarship
money.
We have limited scholarships
limited
available.
Yes.
I also want to mention that for the first time, we have a silent auction that's happening. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that works this year.
Yeah, great. So those numbers are again
937-1222 and 964-8333, and those are both area code 707.
Information about the auction probably people can get when they call as well, right?
Yes, they will. Yeah. And once you sign up, you get emails or information sent to you before the retreat with all the details.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. It sounds like a really wonderful retreat. Did you have something you looked like you wanted to say? Yes.
What I want to say is thank you so much, Janie, for this opportunity.
Oh, yes.
Thank you, Janie.
Yeah, you are most welcome. Thanks again.
Holy, we come in the name of she, singing her song.
My next guest, Leslie de la Madre, has been a student of shamanism for 35 years and a student of goddess spirituality for 15, blending her work with cross-cultural spiritual traditions, including Wicca, Zen, Buddhism, and Native American, and her studies with various teachers of shamanism. Leslie provides a rich, nurturing environment for healing. Good morning, Leslie. I'm so happy to have you on the show once again.
Good morning, Janie. I'm so happy to be here.
It's really just a lovely event for me.
Well, thank you. For me, too.
You know, the first question I ask my guests is, what part did your mother play in your becoming the strong and deep woman that you are today?
Well, thank you for those adjectives. You know, my mother was, she was also a very strong and deep woman in her own way, and she had a lot of dreams, and she really couldn't fulfill them the way she wanted. She was a student. She went to UC Berkeley when she was 16, so she had skipped some grades, and she had aspirations. She wanted to be a lawyer, and she also had been a ballet dancer, and she also had difficulty in that her mother had been diagnosed as mentally ill and had been institutionalized. So she had to help care for her mother. She had to look after her mother and her well-being, and so she wasn't able to move forward with her own dreams. And, of course, at that time, when women were institutionalized, it's questionable to me as to what was going on there, because at the turn of the century, women were institutionalized, put there, considered hysterical, and put in institutions by men mostly, doctors, fathers, husbands, uncles, you know, whatever.
Right.
So it's questionable to me as to why her own mother was institutionalized, because she was a brilliant woman herself and had told my mother, when my mother was a young woman, maybe even a teenager, that it was a man's world. So this is my grandmother who, you know, at the turn of the century, or I don't know exactly when, but she already had a sense of the world that she was living in. And I think she just didn't find a place for it. So, for herself in the world. So the lineage of my mother's side is strong women. So given all that, I just think that my mother did the best that she could. She still helped in the community. She created the Orinda Women's Democratic Club in Orinda in the 1950s, which was, you know, unheard of. Things like that. So she was funky and always cared about people who didn't have enough. I get a lot of that from her.
What a role model.
I mean, she had her issues too, but those parts were great.
You've just come back from a month long in Australia?
Yes.
Doing gatherings for women?
Yes.
What do you call them? Are they gatherings or how do you say that?
There were workshops. The first workshop was for the School of Shamanic Midwifery. They were my sponsors for the whole tour. So I did a workshop specifically for those students at that school at their request because their program of shamanic midwifery delves into women's mysteries. So it was a nice place for me to land and a lovely way for me to meet and share with women in Australia by just sort of diving right in with the women and women's mysteries. And then for the rest of the month, I did a workshop every weekend, which was centered around my book, A Midwifing Death. I don't separate the topic of death and dying and midwifing death from women's mysteries. So I incorporated that topic into a different kind of a workshop than the one I did at the School of Shamanic Midwifery. Then I gave a public talk prior to the workshop so that people could come, and if they didn't want to go to the workshop or couldn't, they could at least have an introduction to what my book is about.
Yes. So. Women's mysteries. What are women's mysteries?
You know, that's a good question. I feel that as a woman, I'm just really uncovering what that means to me because for the last 5,000 years, our mysteries haven't been considered to be of spiritual value. And I think, for instance, that the first shaman was really the circle of women. I don't think it was one person. And this is something that we worked with in all the workshops, is experiencing the shaman as the circle of women. Women's mysteries, for me, are rooted in the wisdom of our blood, our bleeding in tune with the moon, in tune with the cosmos, and understanding the sacredness of the blood of life, which has become totally taboo in patriarchy, but which is in an indigenous way is considered to be the most sacred substance on the planet. If the blood is considered the most sacred substance on the planet, and we know now that menstrual blood is a very powerful source of stem cells, as is mother's milk, I feel like women's mysteries are rooted in the essence of life. And our mysteries of bleeding and giving birth and nourishing from our own bodies and acting as the psychopomp, which is a word that's used in shamanic teachings, is the one who guides the dead, the newly deceased on their journey after death. Midwifing death with the person who is in the process of dying. All of these things, to me, are part of women's mysteries and beyond. It's like our connections to the cosmos and what we bring through our being from our connections with the cosmos, and which I like to call the yoniverse, because according to Barbara Walker, the word yoni is a cognate of the word yoni. And, of course, the yoni is the sacred gateway of birth and death And I think the ancients really had an understanding about this that we don't.
When you consider that the birth is a miracle, it's a total miracle.
Yeah.
Life is coming forth that didn't exist before.
Right.
And this is the way we get in, come into the world. The thing of it is we don't get it.
No, we don't get it.
We kind of numb, you know. We don't see the miracle of life. We don't see the miracle of the flower.
No.
Of course, and all of that then is just kind of, oh, well.
Oh, well, yeah. And birth to me is a metaphor because a woman can give birth in many ways. Not all women are here to have children, to have babies. So their mysteries can come forth in other ways. But the metaphor of birth has been so robbed from women. I mean, it's been taken over in Greek mythology where Zeus gives birth from his forehead or from his thigh, right. Or Adam gives birth from his ribs. These are crazy.
They are, of course.
Notions of birth.
They are.
And this is what men have done. They have, patriarchal men have taken birth as from, you know, only women can do and have tried to make it their own. And I think it's created a great, great deal of violence and oppression and horror in the world just from that alone.
Right. And then they have the audacity to disdain menstruating women.
Yeah.
Or to prohibit breastfeeding. It's such a hatred of the feminine.
Oh, it's so embedded in our culture. It's so embedded. You know, I'm currently in the process of writing about this, how embedded it is, which, you know, would take volumes and volumes, and I'm not going to be able to do that. But I'm going to show the most prominent points of embeddedness that I can think of so that people can rethink what their beliefs are and what they've been conditioned by and what they think.
Right.
You know?
Right. Absolutely. When you speak of the shaman, what are the characteristics of a shaman or being shamanic?
Well, I'm sure that every culture, every shamanic culture has its own ways of looking at that. And the, a lot of the literature that's out there is very male-dominated, so when we think about a shaman, we often think about a male.
Oh, yes, we do.
You know? And
ever heard of a woman shaman? I haven't.
Right. There are some, but right. We don't. Yeah. So again, shamanizing to me is about connecting with the life force and the source of that and being a conduit for that energy. And, you know, that energy can be used in healing. It can be used, well, and that's the biggest thing is, from my point of view, is a focus on healing. There are, and again, there's different views on this because in male-oriented shamanism, we're taught that the shaman is the one who knows how to do stuff.
Yeah.
But I feel in female-oriented shamanism, all women are shamans. And we, by the virtue of our connectedness to the cosmos, to the universe, we have capabilities of understanding how energy works and working with that for the good of all. So I do feel that all women are shamans. Hmm. And I've taken the liberty of calling myself a shamama. I don't call myself a shaman. My view on that is that a person does not call themselves a shaman. They are considered to be that embodiment by their community, not by themselves.
Right, exactly.
However, I do use the word shamama because it's a sweet word to me, and I am a she, and I am a mama. So I can claim that because that's obvious.
That's wonderful. I thought that too in terms of who's enlightened and who isn't. It seems to me that nobody claims being enlightened. If you have to claim it, then you're not.
Right.
Other people recognize it.
Right. It's a very organic process, in my opinion. And it's very indigenous, Aboriginal, tribal, whatever we want to call that. It's not about hierarchy. I do appreciate mentoring and teaching and all of that kind of thing, of course. But the teacher is also a student at the same time. So if the teacher is not an embodiment of the student in an equal kind of way of relating, then that to me is hierarchy.
Yeah, I know, and you don't.
Yeah.
Rather than it's an unfolding mystery that we're all a part of.
And that the beauty of the student brings something that's just as much of a teaching as whatever the teacher thinks they are bringing.
Wow. It's important to talk about it. Spirit moves. Our mother is moving us.
Yes.
Amazing things happen and fall into place or out of place, but it's all part of this unfolding.
Yeah. What is this unfolding? I think it's just like a flower, you know.
Oh,
I don't think the Big Bang is the right metaphor. I think that goes back to men's preoccupation with themselves and their fantasy about being the all-creator God image and men seeing themselves in the image of God, all that stuff. I think it's all about jealousy of women's creative power.
Could you talk a little bit about what the experiences were while you were in Australia in some of your groups?
It's not the same workshop that I present each time, because each group of women is a different group of women, and I feel that I have to be present to what all those women are bringing themselves. The first workshop was really a focus on reclaiming a womb wisdom. And so we did that through a lot of song and dance and sacred theater, journey work, trance work, which, you know, it's not, none of that's planned ahead of time, because it just has to emerge out of the consciousness that we hold together. And that's where, for me, it's really the energy of the ancestors, the energy of the land, the energy of spirit, of the goddess, of mother, all of what we call that, meets us in the moment and guides us. So we really were able to just share in very vulnerable and deep ways with one another. Really, I didn't know any of these women. And in the first workshop, they all knew each other because it was a school. So you know, it's as much about coming into a reclaiming in the moment as it is about any subject matter that I brought with me. I do have a series of PowerPoints. So it just all works together.
I've seen pictures of your gatherings, and you could see how profound they were. And that my sense was they were very deep. People went to very deep places in these workshops.
We did. The actual workshop was called Mothering the Dying. I feel that if we're really going to work with the dying, we have to, as midwives, we have to know what that means for ourselves individually. We have to meet that mystery of dying within ourselves before we can really help anybody else, because it's not about doing, it's about being. And that is something I really focus on. It's not about, okay, now I'm going to do a process about midwifing the dying, you know, and then you get a stamp of approval at the end, and then you've got a certificate, now you're a good technician. It's just not like that. It's about taking women to a place where they can experience the mysteries within themselves and confront their own issues about death and what that means to them. And, I mean, if you don't do that, how can you really think that you can be, that you can midwife someone else in their dying? There's things one can do, and I do cover those as well, but for me, it's about connecting with the ancestors and how the ancestors hold the cycle of life and death, which are not opposites. And going back to the connections, the pre-patriarchal connections, you know, prior to 5,000 years ago. So you can see, I mean, this is a huge undertaking because it's like, I guess that's a pun.
Very good.
because women's wisdom has been so erased, so I can't just do with that work. I have to connect all these dots and go back to a time when women were really profoundly connected to the whole cycle and understand. And that understanding, because there's so much fear now about death, that how do we help each other not be so afraid? And for me, the answer to that is learning about how women are the creators and the birth givers and the nurturers and sustainers of life. And to listen to women, to listen to the mothers, to listen to the grandmothers. Mm-hmm. Women did go to deep places, and one of the things that we did that emerged as a powerful thing to do was to reclaim the power of Medusa, who in Greek mythology, she was beheaded, and great fear arose around her as she was this terrible figure that turned men to stone. And really, she is the face of death and regeneration, and Greeks were seen to be obsessed with immortality, so they didn't want her around. And so we did some sacred theater around restoring that power for women. And in one place, after the workshop, about a week and a half later, the woman had another workshop going in her space there, her sacred space. And the women noticed in the tree outside a diamond python in the tree.
Yeah.
And my friend Glennis said she had not seen a snake in that tree for 15 years. I feel like, you know, we were working with the very deep energies of that land, and the ancestors of that land in our work.
Hmm. Hmm. I'm thinking that Marguerite Rigoglioso, it has been giving probably 6 or 8 months ago, was doing a lot of work in Europe about restoring the head of Medusa.
Yeah, it's really about restoring putting women's power back where it belongs. And for me, the living with those kinds of mythologies as we have, since the Greeks, I mean, prior to that, there was all kinds of other stuff going on, but those misogynist, patriarchal mythologies, they're embedded in our unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very wounding.
Right.
It's just time to reclaim, lots and lots of reclaiming and restorying, remembering. Bringing back all the members of the circles of sisterhood and women really being willing to step out of where we collude in our own oppression. That's a big one. Where we collude in keeping Medusa's power cut off.
And that takes some doing, I can imagine, being very aware. Becoming aware,
yes, and being willing to become aware.
Yes, yeah.
A willingness.
How does that come up in how people make decisions? I mean, I'm just trying to think, or how they dare to, or dare not to step out and argue to confront a man, perhaps not confrontive, but say, no, that's not true, or this is my experience, or whatever.
Yes. Absolutely. I think women were so conditioned in these 5,000 years, and it's just unconscious, that a man knows. A man comes into the room, he changes the energy, and women just go, oh, he knows. You know, it's nothing in our words. You know, it's nothing in even our cognition, you know, our thinking. It's unconscious. And women defer to men all the time. and over everything, anything, even mothers and sons. Now, I know you have sons. I don't know how it was for you, but I have sons. And, you know, they expected me to defer to them. That was in their unconscious.
I don't think my sons expected me to do that. I was kind of out there. But yes, I tell you, I do remember this one child in particular, when they got into junior high or high school, that they would blow me off on occasion.
So would you put that into the category of an expectation to...
Put that in the category of what? I should avoid.
Of them just sort of expecting you to defer or expecting that...
I don't know, not that. That they were criticizing me, not polite way. And I wondered where the heck that came from. That's what I wondered. Where is that coming from? Well, I figured it came from their being in school with other kids and all of it.
The culture.
Yes, exactly. The culture.
Well, yeah, because the culture teaches males that, you know, in order to be a man, you have to dominate women. And so who's the first woman they're going to dominate?
Or they just find fault with.
What's the point of finding fault? In a critical, not very nice way. And I know our daughters do it too. I mean, that's part of the teenage thing.
Yeah.
And the Aborigines say that the problem with Western culture is that males are not initiated into the laws of the universal feminine, because traditional Aboriginal people live by the laws of the universal feminine. And I don't even think most of us have any idea what that even means.
Well, that's what I was trying to think. And I thought the first one must be that all life is sacred.
Yes. And comes from the mother.
Yeah, it comes from the mother.
And when men do their rituals, they are taught, one of the first things they're taught is that the ground on which they stand, their ritual ground, is the mother. It's the mother's ground. It's the mother. Aboriginal people, you know, they have the longest intact shamanic culture in the world in Australia. Hmm. It's at least 50,000 years old. Some resources say it's 100,000 years old. So the people there have the benefit of living on the land that holds that living wisdom in it. And so I feel that they're informed by that.
Well, what an experience.
Yeah, summarize. It just was a life-changing experience to meet so many beautiful women and be so well taken care of and so respected, and to have gone deep with women I didn't know into places where it was a very deep shared sisterhood. You know, it was a very magical experience, and one I'm truly, truly grateful for. And people can go to my blog if they want to read about my trip and see pictures. It's magoism.wordpress.com. magoism.wordpress.com.
Well, thank you, Leslie. It's been wonderful, as always, to have you.
Thank you for having me, Janie.
Singing her song.